everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. In case you thought we forgot, no, we are back. We had a couple of weeks of a hiatus. 1 week I was out of town, like, and the next week, I don't think it's been
at
5 weeks.
Three.
It feels like 5 weeks. It feels like a year. Well, so I was out of town. And then last week we had this bad thunderstorm, and the studio slash my house lost power. So, you know, well, it doesn't matter because we're here now. And that's what's important.
We'll make up for it.
Yes, exactly. We'll make up for it. So I'm Eric. I am here tonight with Jeff.
Good evening.
And also with Lou.
Hello, everybody.
And we are going to be talking about all kinds of things. Wow, we are so far behind. We've got the Wired magazine release. We've got Skype finally coming to 3G networks. We've got some apps we're going to cover. But first, some news that is important to everybody. AT&T is... Oh, this is going to be such a can of worms. AT&T is changing their data plans. So... Lou, I think you probably did most of the typing on this. You want to go over the details?
Sure.
Okay.
They dropped the bomb that I guess on June 7th, they're going to make some changes to the quote-unquote unlimited data plans that they offer today. Right now, they call it a fair use unlimited plan, I guess. I don't know what fair use means, but as long as they feel you're being fair, I guess they'll give you unlimited. And that's $30 a month per phone. Mm-hmm. So if you're like my family, I have an iPhone, my wife has an iPhone, we pay $60 a month.
And, yeah.
You know, that hurts.
It does. But,
it really does. It adds up quick.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to share a plan between the two of us, but
yeah.
Okay. You can't do that. So what they're changing to is what they call Data Plus and Data Pro. The Data Plus plan is going to give us 200 megabytes a month for $15. So half the price of what you're paying today, but substantially limited in terms of what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Data Pro plan, which is their 2 gigabyte plan for $25 a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're giving you some options. You don't have the unlimited anymore. And that's also going to affect the iPad that was... Everybody loved the fact that was that truly unlimited plan. That
yes, and here's the thing: just to make it even more convoluted, the Data Plus. You know, I'm even going to refer to it as the names because that'll just confuse people. The $15 a month plan and the $25 a month plan. So, for the iPad, the $15 a month plan will still give you the 250 megabytes, according to AT&T. So, if you have an iPad, the $15 a month gets you 200. If you have an iPhone, it gets you 200. If you have an iPad, it gets you 250.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, well, it gets even more convoluted because if you go over with the Data Plus on either device, then it gives you another 200 or another 250 at that $15 rate.
I don't think that's so bad, though. That seems like a pretty fair deal.
Well, within the context of this plan, that's fair. Now, whether the overall thing is fair, we'll get to in a second.
Yeah.
The Data Pro, the $25 a month plan, here's the thing. The iPhone is postpaid, right? You sign up for an account and you pay at the end of the month.
Right.
Or at the end of your billing cycle.
Yeah.
So if you have the postpaid on an iPhone, for the $25 a month plan, if you go over, you get another gigabyte for $10. And they automatically start billing you for that. So once you go over that 2 gigabytes, it's another $10 and you get another gigabyte. And then after that, it's another $10 and you get another gigabyte. With the iPad, which is prepaid, once you use up your 2 gigabytes, then they charge you another $25 and give you another 2 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're on the cheaper $15 a month plan, it's better to be on the iPad. If you're on the $25 a month plan, it's actually cheaper to be on the iPhone if you go over. It's very convoluted to me, but I'm sorry. So go on with, I think there's probably some more info here.
I mean, the overages I thought was pretty fair the way they're offering it, and I think on the iPhone at least they're letting you do it a couple different ways. You can actually prorate it for the month you're in. You can, I guess, backtrack it back to the beginning of the month, or just pay extra and then go to the next one. So as far as if you're on that $15 a month plan, you can actually bump up to the $25 a month plan at any time and not get really any penalties, which is nice.
As long as if you go over, as long as if it's done before the end of your billing cycle.
Well, some things I read said you could do it kind of ad hoc whatever you wanted to, either, you know, prorate it from where you are in the billing cycle, you know, 6 days left, 20 days left in the month, or you could actually say, you know what, just make this whole month on the $25 plan. I think we have yet to see what's going to happen with that, but
interesting.
So there's some different thoughts and theories out there on that. The oh, go ahead.
Sorry, no. I mean, I've had situations on my account, things like text messaging, for example, with AT&T. I think at one time my wife and I knocked down to the smallest 250 or so text messages and kind of let it go. And then we went over and got the bill for that. And sometimes you can kind of call AT&T and say, hey, well, what if we went up to our plan and made it retroactive? And sometimes you can get away with asking them to do that, and they'll erase those overages if you up your plan.
Yeah, the trick is being nice to the customer to support AT&T. People. Yeah, they, you know, the people that answer the phones are really tired of people yelling and screaming at them. If you're nice to them, they're more likely to accommodate things like that. So, but yeah, it's possible to kind of go in and, you know, call somebody. I think the official, I think a lot of this, though, is the official word, and then you can probably call up and massage it a little bit if you need
true.
To.
Mm-hmm.
So and they like announced tethering too.
Yes, that's another big thing we've been waiting for since what, last June?
Yeah,
they first talked about it, and the rest of the world got it, but AT&T didn't. Now that we're on non-unlimited plans starting in June, oh, well, I guess back up a second. You have to be on one of these new data plans. You have to be on the Pro plan, the $25 a month plan, to get tethering at all. They
right.
won't give it to you on the $15 plan, which means you're now up to $25. And then to get the tethering, you got to pay another $20 a month, which I don't understand why. I mean, I'm not getting any more data.
Right. Right. You're not getting anything else for it.
Exactly. Just getting the ability to turn this on. So I think that's kind of a slap in the face to the users.
Yeah.
Now, have we guys discussed, I mean, these new iPhone data options are for new customers. These are not retroactive to existing customers.
Correct.
So that's a big change. So, like, you know, I've had my iPhone now since almost the beginning. This is not going to change for me. And I would say probably the majority of our listeners, if you're listening to App Chatter, you probably already have an iPhone or maybe an iPod Touch, and so it's not applicable to them. But
well,
new customers going forward.
Here's the catch, though. I mean, Lou pointed out something really interesting. I'm another household where we have two iPhones and now an iPad. I'm paying $60 a month for data.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just to go off on a slight tangent for a second, and I'll come back to this. I was thinking about canceling the data plan for my iPad because, of course, with the iPad, you prepay. So if you only... Like, I only travel a few times a year, and the rest of the time I mainly have it at home where I've got Wi-Fi.
Right.
So I figured, okay, you know, we went to Orlando a couple of weeks ago, so I'll get it then, and then at the end of the 30 days I'll cancel it, you know, maybe another couple of months I'll activate it again. Well, now, if I just let it continue to renew, then I can continue with the $30 a month for unlimited data, but as soon as I turn it off, if I go to reactivate it again later on, I've got one of these two new options.
Right.
And so I've got to live by that. But the thing is, I think a lot of households that have multiple iPhones are going to be looking at this and saying, you know, $60 a month. Or no, I'm sorry. I said I'm paying 60. I guess I'm paying 90. $60 a month for two iPhones. That's a lot. If we could bring it down to half of that, to $30 a month, and maybe we really don't use a lot of data.
Right.
Maybe that's a benefit, but I think a lot of people
go through and look at your, you know, on the AT&T site to see what your usage has been.
I haven't actually, and I probably should do that.
Yeah, I have not because I don't know what our login is. My wife handles that, and the account's under her name, so I don't know what the actual login to the page is. Now, you can do this from your iPhone if you go into settings, and I think you then go into general or something. There's a usage.
Does that give you just current usage, though, I think?
Well, here's the thing. For the cellular data, it gives you since your last reset of the data. So I went in and looked at it on my iPhone, and I had like a trillion gazillion megabytes because I've never gone in and reset it. So you have to go in and reset it and then monitor it for a month and then go back and check it again, which I, you know, it's going to be easier to log into the website and get your actual data usage from the website. Now, for my iPad, like I said, I only just activated the 3G just before the Orlando trip. And while I was on the Orlando trip, trying to think here. I mean, most of the time I didn't use it because, you know, we were in the hotel room for, you know, a few minutes at night, and the rest of the time we were out doing things. I downloaded and watched, well, I didn't actually download, I streamed about half of an episode of Lost. I then tried to resume it again later, and it made me start over from the beginning, which is kind of annoying. So I think I got through another 10 minutes of it and said, yeah, I'm not going to do this. I'll wait till I get home. I think I downloaded one or two apps while I was there, but you on 3G, they've got to be under 20 megs anyway, so that was an insignificant amount. And I didn't really do a lot of other downloading of anything. And when I looked at the usage, it said that I had like 750 megs down and like maybe 35 megs up. So I've used over 75%, almost 80% of a gigabyte just over the course of like 3 or 4 days.
Now, is that total usage or is that only 3G usage?
That was the next thing. I said, this can't be right. So I looked, and now that is the actual cellular data network usage. So, and people have said their test results on streaming video have been unusually high, to the point where people wonder if it's reporting it incorrectly on that page. So that's why I'm curious to log in and check it out. But, you know, something to consider, a lot of people are considering maybe dropping down to the 200 megabytes. If you have an iPad and, you know, you've probably got the Netflix viewer, you've probably got the ABC app, CBS is going to have HTML5 on their website now. A lot of people are looking forward to streaming video. And now with this new OS coming out where you can multitask, the big thing everybody's talking about is streaming audio. Now, audio's not anywhere near the kind of bandwidth the video is, and I'm sure it's highly compressed and all that, but when you think about it, you know, that's, we're only talking 200 megs a month. Even just streaming audio, you could probably whip through that pretty quickly. So once the multitasking comes out that everybody's been waiting for, I bet people are going to whip through that 200 megs like mad. If you're that type of user. I mean, of course, this all depends on what type of user you are.
Well, like, you know, in my example, my wife and I, my wife is not a power user. She uses the phone. She likes some of the apps. She doesn't do a lot of email on the phone. She doesn't do a lot of, you know, streaming video. And myself, you know, we have Wi-Fi at home. I have access to Wi-Fi at work. And I don't travel that much anymore. So I'm not really looking to be a 3G user heavy out in the field.
Right.
You know, my average usage over the last 7 months that I was able to get off AT&T was like 180 megabytes a month. So I'm like, well,
that's not bad.
My life is less than that. So I'm thinking, you know, hey, I cut both my plans down to $15. And if I go over once in a while, I pay another $15.
Yeah, I'm looking at my data usage right here. And I've only gone over 250 megs once since December.
Well, 200 megs if you're on an iPhone.
Okay, well, then twice then. So it's 276 megs and then 233. Both of those, and that was these past months, both of those have been since I changed my wireless network in my house from G to N and have just put my iPhones on 3G instead of Wi-Fi. Since both my wife and I live and work at home, we're not running on Wi-Fi when we're using our phones most of the time. The reason for that being that my wireless router is cranky and it runs incredibly slow when I have it on G. Even my computer's wired to the network, and still when I put it on G, it's really slow. So I'm trying to figure that out. Other months, it's like 147, 119, 61, 88.
So you would definitely benefit from the $15 a month one.
Yeah.
See, I don't know. I really need to go and look to see what kind of user I am, because it's hard if you're on the cusp. You know, do you go with the lower plan and risk it, or do you just stay safe and keep it on unlimited? Because I tell you what, if I'm only going to say $5 a month,
right,
I don't know that it's a benefit to drop down. So as an iPad 3G user, it's even worse, because for $5 a month, I definitely would want to get the unlimited for the iPad. But most months I don't want any coverage at all.
Right.
So that's really
harsh.
You can't do that.
You can't drop out of that.
Right. Right.
And you're essentially just paying to hold your place.
Which, and that doesn't make any logical sense. That's fiscally irresponsible.
Right. Yeah.
So this kind of frustrates me. So I think my wife's will definitely drop down to the $15 a month plan. My iPhone, I don't know. I might leave it on unlimited. And then the iPad, I can't justify keeping the 3G data on it all the time. And that's not what I bought it for. So I think I'm going to have to get rid of that. Now, here's another thing, though, about the tethering. I'm thinking, my first question is, okay, well, why don't I just keep my iPhone on unlimited and then set up the tethering for it and then use the tethering with my iPad? Well, first of all, if you get tethering, you can't stay on unlimited. You have to go with the Data Pro plan. Mm-hmm. So you have to go with the 2 gigabyte plan. Okay, well, that's fine. And of course, that 2 gigabyte counts toward whatever device you're tethering to your iPhone.
Yep.
So you're now sharing that. But it gets worse because it's Bluetooth tethering. This is not one of those. A lot of people are thinking it's going to be like the MiFi system, which is basically a Wi-Fi hotspot. This is going to be Bluetooth tethering. And you cannot tether an iPad to an iPhone because the iPad operating system does not allow for Bluetooth tethering. It's not an AT&T thing. It's that the OS does not allow the iPad to be tethered via Bluetooth.
That is just so wrong.
Well, see, now, what this does for me is just, all this does is make jailbreaking that much more attractive to me.
Yeah.
It's one thing for me if there's some app or some application or some functionality that jailbreaking is going to get me from my phone or my iPad, whatever. But if it's going to save me $20 a month or more, yes, please.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been very anti-jailbreaking. I don't have a problem with the people who do it. But for me, I'm like, no, I'm just going to keep it clean. And, you know, if I need support for something, I'll have it, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. This makes a compelling argument for jailbreaking.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah, I mean, I'm much more likely, because it's an OS limitation in the iPad, to jailbreak my iPad, leave the unlimited on my iPhone, my original unlimited, and go to town.
Yeah,
I don't have a 3G iPad. I have a Wi-Fi only iPad.
And I think a lot of people are thinking along those same lines that, hey, I'll get the Wi-Fi only, and I'll just tether it to my iPhone when that becomes available.
You know, I got to do the numbers, because if I'm paying $90 a month just for the data alone, that's not including the cell phone, like the minutes and stuff for using the phone feature, I got to wonder if it wouldn't be cheaper to get a Verizon MiFi thing, use that for all of my data, get rid of the 3G coverage entirely for my iPad, drop my iPhones down to at least the 15 thing. So, you know, that's $60. So the question is, can I get MiFi for less than $60? And if so,
I think the MiFi is $60 a month, isn't it?
Well,
but it's $60 for 5 gigs, then, I think. So
there you go. So actually, data. It's cheaper if you've got two iPhones and an iPad. It would be cheaper to do that.
As long as your wife is with you all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, as long as she stays under 200 megs, with me all the time,
running them all off the MiFi.
Well, with an iPhone, you have to have a data plan, right? I mean, that's true. A contractual thing with AT&T. So the lowest you can go is for the 200 megs at $15.
$15, yeah.
So, yeah. So the good news is you're not really going to ever, if you go over that 200 megabytes, hopefully it's theoretically via Wi-Fi through the MiFi system with Verizon. And so that would comp. I mean, the whole thing is just really complicated doing that. But if you want to sit down and look at the actual numbers, it's probably cheaper, if not cheaper financially, then at least you're getting more bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, somewhere I did read that AT&T said 60% of the iPhone users do not use over 200 megs a month.
No. Let's look at that statistic. I don't have it in front of me, and I think you're right on the numbers, but that's of smartphone users. And 98% of smartphone users don't go over 2 gigabytes.
Oh, I thought it was. Okay.
Yeah, it's not iPhone. It's smartphone
users. It was iPhone only, yeah.
And well, that's what everybody's thinking. But if you segregate out just the iPhone statistics out of that, the surveys have come back for a while now saying that iPhone users use more bandwidth than other smartphone users.
And that makes perfect sense.
So AT&T's statistics on that are not inaccurate, but with the context, they're maybe a little bit deceptive, in my opinion.
Let me ask you this question. Obviously, mm-hmm. I mean, these changes are a reaction to AT&T feeling the complete exclusive brunt of having the iPhone on their network.
Yes.
Obviously. Because, you know, they're limiting usage and they're backing things down. They're trying to throttle people, not to be jerks, I don't think, not to have bad press, but because they've got to do something to be responsible to a degree with what they've got. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have to wonder if there isn't part of AT&T that's saying, would Verizon please just go ahead and freaking get the iPhone so we can get some of this off of our network and we can start to do some things that are going to generate some positive press?
Let's share the load here. Well, first of all, officially what they're saying, and of course this is just officially, they're saying that no, this has nothing to do with the load that they're experiencing on their network, which they've already fessed up to publicly. You know, they've said the iPhone has had a massive success rate, and therefore their networks are experiencing traffic unlike what they had ever dreamed of. But what they're saying is that these lower data plans will allow more people to come in and transition to smartphones.
That's a crock of crap.
They're actually allegedly trying to bring more people in. Well, and here's the other thing. I don't think they want Verizon to get the iPhone because pretty much the entire West Coast is going to leave AT&T if that happens. I'm on the East Coast, and we've said before on this and Tech Chatter and, you know, some of our other shows, we get pretty good AT&T coverage out here on the East Coast, but for some reason, the West Coast has just been nothing but problems, and people out there are dying to get off of AT&T, and as soon as Verizon gets the iPhone, there's going to be this mass exodus, and I don't think AT&T wants that. I understand their network is swamped, but I don't know that that's actually the solution that they're hoping for. Now, as a customer, I hope that that happens. Because then I think we're going to see, you know, more competitive rates and things like that. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, I think the big thing that AT&T is trying to push here is tethering. Everybody's wanted tethering for so long, and they're like, okay, well, we're giving you tethering, and you know, yeah, we're kind of screwing you over here, but don't look at that. We're giving you tethering.
Well, in one respect, I don't care. I mean, I don't mind these new data plans. I think they're actually pretty good in my case because I'm going to save, you know, $350 a year or whatever it's going to be. So I'm pretty happy with that. But I'm not happy with the fact that, you know, I'd love to be able to have tethering for my laptop when I'm out somewhere else, but I'm not going to pay $20 a month just to do that. I mean, for the occasional use I'm going to get out of that, $20 a month to share the same data I'm already paying for, you know, that should be free. I mean,
well, and what kind of tethering is it really? I mean, I don't know. I guess you can do it over USB and the speed on that's probably okay. But if you do it via Bluetooth, I can't imagine the speed's very good. I don't remember what Bluetooth caps out at. Jeff, I don't know if you know or not.
I don't have the slightest idea. I think for me that the catch on tethering is that there's no additional bandwidth. Part of the package. It's $20 extra just for the privilege, just for the added functionality, but it's not an included additional gig, 2 gigs, whatever. That to me is just a huge ripoff.
Yeah, and the functionality is in the device already. They just basically they flip a switch once and you pay $20 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's
I would have been okay with that if it was still unlimited, because then, hey, I'm going to use a lot more data.
Right.
You know, I expect to. I'm using two devices. I'm using a laptop or an iPad, for example.
Well, that would totally kill their network, though.
Yeah, it would. But to pay, like Jeff said, to pay more just for the privilege of being able to use my same 2 gigabytes on another device.
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
That's, you know, that's just, it's ridiculous. And the thing is, it seems like it's... I guess I would complain a little bit less about it if it were like a Wi-Fi hotspot type of thing. Well, I think that's what I envisioned it was going to be.
You
know, and that's what I think a lot of people still think it's that.
Because now on Android devices, when they do tethering, because I think they allow that on Verizon, I think, right? Anybody know? Yeah.
I think they do, yeah.
Is that a regular hotspot? Is it regular Wi-Fi?
It's going to depend on the device.
The Android phones are going to have that ability to be right. to generate a Wi-Fi network.
Right.
And then, of course, there's the MiFi itself, which is a separate device. But
separate device, yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't think you can compare what we have to a MiFi to a different device altogether, but...
Right.
But
I'm just thinking if a phone's going to be a hotspot,
right.
You know, it should be the same across the board.
Yeah, this $20 for nothing thing is kind of infuriating. And even then, it would still be cheaper if I could tether my iPad to my iPhone. I would be upset about the fact that I'm paying $20 for nothing, and I'm still, mm-hmm. you know, the bandwidth is covered in a totally separate cost, but I can't even tether my iPad to my iPhone now. So I don't know.
Back when they first announced the iPad, I thought this was the perfect application to say, you know what? You've probably got an iPhone. You're going to buy an iPad. Here's one data plan that covers both devices. It's only going to be for your phone and your iPad. You can't tether your friend's iPad to it. Just those two devices that you own.
Right.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, I'm your customer already. Let me be your customer.
Yeah.
And two, I wish, do I get access to the AT&T wireless hotspots if I'm going to buy this tethering?
If you have any data plan, my understanding is you do have access to all of the AT&T hotspots. However, I have to look at the number. I think it's something like 21,000 AT&T hotspots across the country. 17,000 of those 21,000 are McDonald's and Starbucks, where it's free anyway.
Well, that's not true. Wi-Fi at Starbucks is not free.
Oh, I thought that they had made it free or something. It's free for a certain period of time.
No.
2 hours. Okay,
then it might not be Starbucks, it might be a different. You know, or whatever, okay. Bell South account. What I'm wanting is access to those kind of things for, like, not get it's free for your iPhone. If you hop on there with the iPhone, it texts the iPhone, you're free. That's not a problem. Mm-hmm. I want it free for my MacBook Pro if I'm doing tethering.
I see what you're saying.
I want to be able to, if there's an AT&T hotspot in an airport, I want to be able to hop on my MacBook Pro, it recognizes that I'm a tethering customer, and be able to use that.
Yeah.
That might
not gonna happen.
Take the sting out of it a little bit, but not, I mean, it's still not worth
it. Well, how do you connect with an AT&T hotspot then? If you have a laptop with Wi-Fi, don't you still have to log in via your AT&T account?
You can log in, but it doesn't recognize you as an AT&T wireless customer. It doesn't. It doesn't give you access to that. That doesn't work. Hmm. No, you have to log in with some kind of, you know, if you're a DSL customer or something like that, then you can use it. But not if you're just an AT&T cellular customer. Now, again, if I logged on my iPhone, it sees that, I'm good to go. But not just your computer. Other than that, you have to pay for it. Daily, weekly, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Another recent thing that AT&T has done is they have lowered the early termination fees from $175 down to, I believe it's $125 or $150.
If
you're a regular cell phone user, if you are a smartphone user, see
what you did there.
You thought I had good news. Yeah. Now, if you're a smartphone user, like pretty much our entire audience, then it went from $175 up to $325 for early termination.
That's a big jump.
That'll take a bite out of crime.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking of leaving for Verizon once that gets announced.
I did like the way everybody jumped on the bandwagon and said, oh, how evil AT&T is. Verizon did that last November. They went to $350 for an early termination fee on most of their smartphones. They've lowered some of them down, I guess, back to $175, but most of their smartphones are still at $350 as far as I was able to tell online.
Well, maybe that's not that unreasonable then.
I think the reason that Apple is, or AT&T is catching this flak is because of the timing of it is so close to the 4G launch of the iPhone. And, you know, if there's any... If it's coming down the pipe that Verizon may get it here soon, then yeah, I would. I still think, I don't think it's a, I think, yeah, it's kind of a sucky thing to do, but
yeah,
I don't see it as a bad business decision, especially since a smartphone with its data plan represents a higher monthly income to them. There should be a subsidizing higher termination fee.
They're probably subsidizing more of the device when you buy it, too. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, as a business decision, sure, I think it's absolutely fine. They're here to make money. But you're right. I think that everybody in the tech industry is seeing this because they all want Verizon. They think AT&T is, not as good as Verizon. But, they're all the same. All these companies, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, they treat their existing customers like, hey, last week's news, and they just want new customers. So we keep getting, the short end of the stick, so to speak, and they don't do anything for us.
Yeah.
I was taught in business school that it's cheaper to keep a customer than it is to get a new customer.
Well, let me tell you one thing that they are doing for us kind of related to this. They have actually gone and adjusted some people's eligibility for upgrade. My understanding is as much as by 16 months. So if you want to get the new iPhone coming up in, I guess probably in a few weeks here. And I just got my iPhone 3GS in January. And I checked, and apparently I am going to be eligible for an upgrade. And not one of these $100 off upgrades, but the actual new subscriber version of the upgrade when
that's a first.
New iPhone comes out. Yeah.
Well, that was a huge deal last year.
Yes.
Yes.
I spent many hours on the phone with AT&T going around and around about this because my wife was eligible and I was not. And we bought our phones on the same day.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I was not eligible for another 6 months.
Wow. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that conversation.
Yeah. It basically boiled down to that her number was set as the primary number. And that because, my phone was then just an add-on. It's like, $10 a month or however they spent it. And her number, quote unquote, equaled, $100 or more. Because then that's the number that gets it first.
Wow.
Yeah, it was stupid. Yeah, I got my money. I mean, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I took care of it, but it was not fun.
What a pain.
Well, my wife and I do the musical iPhones. She was ready for an upgrade last year, and I wanted the 3GS, so she got my 3G. She got the 3GS on her phone number. We swapped SIMs after the fact, so I had to do her phone. And
my wife is willing to do that too, but she's also I wouldn't mind getting something actually new someday for me. And so she was going to get the new iPhone when it comes out, and I was just going to let her have that as her phone under the condition that I could review stuff on it for the podcast if I needed to.
There you go.
But now that we can both upgrade, it's starting to sound like we might both just get new phones, except then a year from now, if they don't do this again, there's going to be an iteration of the iPhone that I'm not going to be able to keep up with if we continue doing the podcasts and stuff. And that's going to be kind of annoying because right now, at least it's staggered.
But, yeah, I'm going to keep mine staggered so I can always get the newest one because to me, this is a toy. This is a gadget. I want the latest, greatest gadget out there. I don't want to wait a year. And, up until the iPhone, up until smartphones really came on the market, it didn't really matter. A phone was a phone.
Right.
But now I want the new thing. What's it going to do for me?
I rely on my I don't rely on my iPad mini now as much as I do my iPad, but before I got my iPad, I relied on my iPad mini for practically everything. I mean, having a kid and not being able to sit down at a computer desk because he's too young to really be left alone to do much other than tearing the entire house apart. Jeez. Anyway, that was my main computing device. And that, that was more than just a toy to me. That was a big deal. But I got to say, now that I've got the iPad, my iPhone usage is way, way down. I mean, maps and GPS when I'm driving, and obviously the phone and text messaging, email. Sometimes I'll read RSS stuff if I've only got my phone and not my iPad. And maybe a couple of games, but even games I used to love before, I'm like, oh, this screen is so tiny. It's it's weird. It's hard to use. I guess I didn't expect to drop my iPhone usage by this much. It was kind of a surprise to me. But all right. Anyway, back to the news. What else do we have? Jeff, was it you that said that you had gotten the, I think it was either you or Lou, had gotten the At-Bat 2010 app?
That would be Lou.
Yeah, I got the light version, actually. I didn't pay for the full thing, and I don't have it on the iPad, so I don't have the real big one.
Okay. Now, I don't know about the iPhone, but on the iPad, it's apparently $14.99.
I don't think it's that expensive on the iPhone, but it is more than free.
Yeah. yeah, the iPad version apparently is about $15, and there's some controversy because now they're throwing ads in.
Yeah, that's just...
Well, here's the thing, though, and a lot of people are up in arms about it, and I don't really like it that much. I kind of got burned a little bit on the CNN app where, I mean, it was only a couple of dollars, but then they also threw in ads, and I was, you know, it was nice to get the news and to get it from CNN, but, you know, just charge me a couple extra dollars and don't put the apps in, or the ads in, and I probably would have been happier. But with this, at least what they're doing is there's an ad on the splash screen, which you have to wait through anyway for the app to fully load. And then on the outfield walls, like as you're looking out through the outfield. And don't, I mean, I'm not a sports nut, but don't they do that anyway if you watch the game on TV?
Sure. That's pretty clever. Yeah.
So it's not really any different. No, I think it is really clever because you can't really complain about that because it's the same thing that happens when you're watching it on TV. The ad's not in the way. It's just on the outfield walls.
Right.
I don't know. So I think people, yeah, it's something that we kind of need to be, you know, as an app buying community, we need to be vigilant about and make sure the developers know where we stand on it. But I don't think that this is really that big a violation.
Well, I definitely don't like the trend of, hey, pay for the app and I'm going to insert ads in it. Or you should have the free app, which has just as ads in it. I mean, I think one of the things that I'm paying for when I buy a premium version of an app over just getting a light version is that I'm going to have an ad-free experience.
Right.
You know, I think that's just kind of how the way things have gone. I mean, it's totally up to the developers. If they want to put ads in their premium app, then so be it. I don't know. I'm going to look for an alternative, though. That doesn't. I mean, I guess if you have a monopoly like MLB does, and nobody has access to that information but MLB, then I guess you can just sit there and do it and whistle Dixie about it. But, I mean, I guess the other things that, you know, are doing that, Twitter apps and things like that, there's too much competition for Twitter to put ads in your premium app.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine that flying in a arena like that.
Well, this is one of those situations where, you know, they say that success equals performance minus expectations. So in other words, if your expectations are bigger than the performance, you're going to have a negative experience. Whereas if the performance exceeds the expectations, you'll have a positive experience. And so is it fair to put ads in apps that you have to pay for? I'm sure the developers will say, well, listen, this is the equivalent, you know, on a computer, this would be like a $50 application. And I'm charging you three, so sure, it's fair that I put ads in. And maybe they're right, but they need to understand that, you know, like Jeff, as you said, the expectation from the users is going to be that if you pay for the app, you don't get ads.
Well, and I would say to that argument, price your app accordingly from the beginning. Okay, you're in charge of setting the market for the price for your app. Apple doesn't do that. I don't bid how much I want to pay for your app. You set the price.
Well, but the argument is that they've got to stay competitive with the market. And as we've talked about before, the market kind of raced to the bottom so quickly.
Well, that happens in every market. I mean, the length of time, the longer something is out, the lower the price is going to go. And you can look in every avenue of that. Okay.
Then I'd say, I don't know, keep your prices the same year over year or make the better product like Apple does and keep your prices consistently on the higher end. And two, you have an MLB app, which has manufactured obsolescence in it, and every year they're going to make you buy the app again. Okay. Right. So we're not even talking about the fact that users already paid for the app this year, and then in an update,
they put ads in. It's not like they did it for right. next year's app. They put it in after they've already purchased it this year, which I think is a different level of shady or kind of feeling about it.
Kind of, we'll see if anybody notices type thing. I think this got all the publicity because, you know, at $14.99, this is, you know, one of the higher priced apps out there.
Yeah.
And it's not like it does. I shouldn't say it does a lot. It's a very cool, very slick app. The iPad mm-hmm. version even does video, which is kind of cool. So for $15, it's probably worth it for a real avid baseball fan. But then to turn around and all of a sudden start inserting ads into it, you know, my point of view is like, well, where does that end? Now they're unobtrusive ads on the splash screen and on the outfield walls, but later on, are they going to start making me wait between innings, you know, with an ad that comes up?
Right. Right.
So, yeah. You know, it's at that slippery slope. What are they going to get away with next?
Well, you know, it is tough because, like I said, those are the same types of ads that you see when you watch the game on television. So, and they're not in the way. They do not interfere with the content. They do not interfere with the interface. So it's kind of hard to complain about them. But yeah, with a $15 app, it's setting a worrisome trend I don't know. It's something to be concerned about for the future, I think, but I can't really complain about what they're doing right now with it. I think if you're going to have ads, this is the way it should be. It should be something where it's there and you can see it, but you're not really concentrating on it and it's not getting in the way of your experience. But, you know, that's my two cents.
And how much this changes once, you know, iAd comes out.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a big unknown. We don't know how those are going to be implemented and where they're implemented. So,
yeah.
We'll wait and see.
All right. Well, we should move along here. Let's see. There's a bunch of little things this week. The Barnes & Noble's e-reader came out. I don't really know that we care a lot about that.
I mean, there's one cool thing about that Barnes & Noble app.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. And that allows you to share your e-books
with other people.
Well, that's nice.
That is very cool.
Which is something I hope the iBook store, whatever, adds in the future. Because that's just one of the things to me that's a real limit to buying an ebook versus a hard copy. You know, there have been several times where you want to swap books. That's one of the things people swap a lot often. You know, it's just as much as movies. I think less now. I don't really lend out movies anymore. But my wife still lends out a good number of books and then borrows a good number of books.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that kind of communal experience of a book that has always been there that is lost with the ebook. And that's something that I think Barnes & Noble picked up on. So it's free. I picked it up. It's nice. It's got some good reading options. I think it's a better presentation than the Kindle app.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have any books on it, and I haven't had time to read any of the samples they've got. And that's kind of the thing, too. The Amazon Kindle app has been around for long enough, and the iBook app has been out just long enough ahead of the Barnes & Noble's app that I think a lot of the people who are reading ebooks have probably already invested in purchases in one of the other stores.
Right.
So that's kind of that's going to hurt them a little bit in that they're a little bit late to the game. But the sharing thing, if they keep promoting that and if, you know, word of mouth gets around on that, that is definitely a big feature.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see
that. But it's something that Apple could add at some point later down the road.
True.
Fairly easily. So I'd like to see that.
Of course, you know, lending books, books are something that, unlike movies and especially unlike music, once you get through a book, few people go back and reread it. So if I borrow a book from you, I'm not going to go buy it. Apple's just lost that sale.
And I understand that, but and I think this is where content providers, publishers and things like that are going to get, if they try to lock this down, I think they're going to alienate their customers. And this is the publishing industry is going through the same thing that the music industry had to go through and then the movie industry had to go through. They have to reevaluate who their customer is. And Steve Jobs touched on this at the Digital 8 conference a couple days ago and said that publishers right now, their customer is the bookstore. you know, the Barnes and Nobles and the Walmarts and so on and so forth. It's not Joe Schmo book reader. Okay.
Right.
So they sell to retailers and then whatever. Okay. And they're not used to marketing directly to the consumer, and the music industry went through that too. And, you know, the iTunes store changed that, and the movie industry right now is going through that as well. Because there ain't no more rental places besides Blockbuster.
Well, and I've seen a lot of those close down.
And they have all filed for bankruptcy, pretty much, except for Blockbuster.
Yeah.
That's it. And so I just think it's a content distribution wave that has started really primarily in music and gone through the movie industry and is now going to hit the book industry. So,
and the comic books, which is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. We'll talk about that probably, I don't know, I guess a week or two, depending on the big announcements that we're counting on coming out next week. But yeah, I think you're right. We're definitely seeing, I think probably books and comic books are the last two holdouts as far as the big media.
And what's interesting about this is that the game industry is kind of ahead of the curve already with Steam. If you're not familiar with Steam, Steam is a content delivery system for gaming that works on Windows and just recently came over to the Mac side.
Well, and also things like the Xbox Live.
Yeah, things like it allows you to download games. You know, Steam is kind of the first one that started this, and several other kinds of ways have popped up. But they're not waiting for this wave to crash into them. They've gotten ahead of it.
Right.
And they've already established this behavior now, so it's not something that Apple can kind of come in and take over, which is a good thing. I don't want everything to go through Apple.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see the way that the gaming industry, which by revenue is a bigger industry than the movie industry is.
Mm-hmm.
It's already ahead of this. And that's an industry where piracy and stealing has been a problem way longer than it has been in the entertainment industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just find that fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving along here. Let's see. What else do we have? Oh, this cracked me up. I still have not gotten an iPad camera connection kit for my iPad. And I would like to get one because the Tech Chatter podcast and sometimes Movie Chatter, I actually Skype in through my iPhone, and I'd like to do it on my iPad and use the USB connection for a headset. Apparently, because all of the stores are sold out of them, there's like a 2 or 3 week delay on shipping. You can get them on eBay for over $100. Engadget had a picture in their article where an auction had ended at $187.
And what's retail?
This it's either $29 or $39.
Oh my lord!
Yeah.
Wow.
Golly. Yeah, six times as much.
You've got to really, really, really want that.
Now, ridiculous. Do you have to jailbreak the iPad in order to use a device like that?
What Andy Anatko was saying, I don't know if you guys know who he is, Chicago Sun-Times, and he's on a lot of the Twit-related podcasts. Mm-hmm. He had talked to somebody who indicated it's a driver issue. Like, the reason you don't have to have drivers for some of these devices is because the way the Bluetooth drivers work allow for this type of interactivity with the device, like their Bluetooth headsets. So therefore, plugging in a microphone or a gaming headset via USB will work. They're Bluetooth keyboards. So plugging in a USB keyboard will work. Plugging in an external hard drive will not work. So the only thing I've heard confirmed so far are just the keyboards and the headsets. And some keyboards, if they require too much power, don't work. I guess if it were really important to you, you could plug the keyboard into a powered USB hub and then plug the hub into the iPad. Seems a little convoluted, but if that's what you want, so be it. But yeah, so it's keyboards and audio headsets. And that's all I've heard of so far. But there's no jailbreaking involved. There's no installation of specific apps or drivers or configuration, anything like that.
Hmm.
Which is kind of cool. They, you know, kind of found it by accident, which I think is kind of funny.
You know, but somebody which just had the camera connection kit, just started plugging everything USB into the thing.
Oh,
What happens here?
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. I could definitely get a lot of use out of the headset on it. Speaking of Skype, they are finally offering 3G calling. something that people have been wanting for a long time. However, they said that we will have to start paying for a mobile subscription as of August.
Actually, that was changed, I think, to the end of the year.
It was changed, yes. There was such an outcry that they rather quietly changed it to the end of 2010. But the end of 2010, unless something else happens, if you're going to do 3G calling via Skype, you're going to have a mobile subscription. And this is different from whatever existing Skype subscription you may have.
Now, what is driving this? Is AT&T driving this or Skype driving this?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question. It doesn't make sense coming from Skype.
Well,
yeah, because I don't understand. Yeah, I don't understand the motivation behind Skype charging for this. Yeah,
nobody has publicly said either way. Well, it doesn't matter because once these new data plans roll out, if you're on the $15 a month plan, I think you probably got a 7.5 minute phone call you can make once a month via Skype, and you're done.
Good point.
I'm kidding. I think the bandwidth usage for Skype, my understanding is it's actually pretty efficient. The sound quality is supposed to be pretty good. It is at least as good as a cellular phone call from what people are reporting. I don't know who's pushing for it. I mean, AT&T, I think they've already got their bases covered with the data plan, and I don't know that Skype is kicking any of this money back to AT&T. You would think they must be. But from a customer service point of view, like, if I'm paying for having a regular phone number through Skype, I think it's like $3 a month for the voicemail, and it's something like $30 a year to have the phone connection. To have to then pay even more to be able to use Skype through my iPhone seems kind of silly.
It seems silly to me that Skype is asking for this unless they're paying AT&T for it, because to them, what do they care if you're on 3G or Wi-Fi or on your computer?
That does seem to be the only logical explanation.
Because it's not like ABC charged for 3G streaming when they added it to their iPad app.
Right.
That was just a tweak on their end. And that's video, like we've discussed before.
Right.
So I don't understand it. Unless they just see a revenue opportunity, and they'd be silly not to take it.
I'm hoping that if that's the case, if AT&T is asking Skype to cover some costs related to this, I'm hoping that if AT&T is going to go with a fixed bandwidth, it's technically data usage. It's not technically bandwidth, but that's a whole nother techie discussion. If AT&T is going to give you fixed data usage per month, I would hope that would cover any concerns they have with things like Skype via 3G. I mean, you should be able to open up anything you want now. The 20 megabyte download that iTunes
does.
That's
true, yeah.
It doesn't matter because once you hit that cap, AT&T is going to get their money.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. So maybe Skype will, with these new AT&T data plans, maybe Skype will say, well, that's all going away. I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows? We'll probably see you in the next week or so.
Just rattling out a few of these other things here. There are a lot of motherboard manufacturers who have released updated drivers that will allow the iPad to charge on Windows machines. So if you've been having that issue, check your motherboard manufacturer's drivers. Or if you've got like a Dell or something like that, just go to their site and go to support, and you can probably look it up from there.
Good luck finding that.
Well, Dell's not too bad. They've got the whole service tag thing. If you know how to do that, it could be worse. I've seen a lot of places that are much worse. If you are a Google Docs user like I am, all of our show notes for our podcasts, we run through Google Docs. And I'm very happy to be able to announce that Docs2Go has a universal update for the iPad. Whether you're using the premium version, which I think is $15, or the non-premium version, which is $7, and then you could upgrade in-app to the premium version. Either of those, now you can run that on the iPad. You can connect to Google Docs. And in my opinion, it's the best Google Docs editor for the iPad. Of course, there's only like two, maybe three out there anyway. But it was also my favorite for the iPhone. So I'm pretty happy to see this come along. And again, that is a universal update. What else do we have here? Chilingo is bringing Predators to the iPhone. One of you guys threw that in the show.
Yeah, I threw that in. I'm not usually a big movie game player, I guess, if you want to call them that. But I did like some of the Aliens games in the past, and Aliens and Predator kind of go together, and I'm thinking maybe this will be good, so we'll wait and see. But it looks, the graphics look pretty good on the screen.
Well, and Chillingo is considered to be one of the better developers on the App Store.
True.
So, I mean, they know their stuff, and hopefully they will come out with a good app. The movie actually looks pretty good, too, but that's a discussion for a different show.
Different show, yes.
And then, of course, next week with WWDC, we will hopefully have some very interesting news to cover. One last thing that just came out about an hour before we started recording, Carcassonne, which I think I've mentioned before, it's a tile-based board game that's very popular, similar to Settlers of Catan and yet also radically different at the same time. It has now been released for the iPhone. I wish I could have had an opportunity to play with it before the show tonight because I've been dying to get my hands on this. If you're at all familiar with the game, it has hit the iTunes store as of tonight. It is $4.99 for the iPhone. They will be releasing a universal update to the iPad, at which time the price will go up to $9.99. So definitely get it at the iPhone price. I haven't gotten any word yet. I've been in talks with their press people. I'm trying to figure out when the iPad version is due, but we will have a review next week on that. We talked about the movie peg before. Now, we're kind of now in our review section real quick. I just want to say that after traveling to Orlando and having a chance to try out both some of the alarm clock apps we talked about a couple of weeks ago and the movie peg, to stand my iPhone up, I ended up using that as an alarm clock for the whole vacation, and it was awesome. Yet another reason to pick up a movie peg.
I really want one. I just want them to come out with one for the iPad first, and then I'll buy both.
Yeah, I haven't gotten word back on when they're going to release the iPad version. I'm very anxious to get that, too. And I tell you what, I would pre-order one now, sight unseen. I don't even know what the iPad one's going to look like, but they have done such a good job with the one for the iPhone. I love this thing. It's hot pink, and even despite that, I actually took it traveling with me because it is just that good an accessory.
And it matched all the rest of your luggage.
It did. It blended. See, that's the thing. Nobody knew that I had a hot pink movie peg because it just blended in with all my luggage. It was awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I didn't have to be embarrassed about it.
Yes.
Seriously, though, they come in a bunch of different colors. I'll just give them a plug here anyway, a full plug. They come in a bunch of different colors. They are, when you do the conversion for the pounds, I think it is about $10 U.S., and it's definitely worth picking one up if you have an iPhone.
I actually think it's less than that. They've actually changed their website now to reflect U.S. pricing. It's $7.30.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Cool. I'm totally picking up a black one then.
Yeah. Maybe more tax. I don't know, but that's what the price they have on their site now is.
Cool. So. All right. Reviews. You guys have anything interesting you want to talk about?
We've talked about Goodreader before, which is the it bills itself as more as a PDF, a large PDF reader for the iPhone and iPad. the other day I was there last Sunday. I do PowerPoint presentation stuff for my church on Sunday mornings in a program called ProPresenter.
Okay.
And I'm sitting back there in the middle of service, and I'm running tech. And our church building is rather new, and we still don't have internet in the building yet because we really we don't need it right at this moment. And I'm sitting there, and my pastor just started preaching, and he started going to this line of the sermon where I knew he had asked me earlier in the week to get him some displays, like some graphs or some illustrations for the screen. Totally forgot about it. Totally forgot about it.
That's a bad time to remember.
He didn't mention it in our pre-service meetings, just forgot about it. He starts into it, and I'm freaking out. I had done them, and I had uploaded them to my Dropbox for him to preview, but I had forgot to bring them that morning to load onto the computer, and I am just about to beat my head against the wall. And remember, we have a 24-inch iMac there, and no internet, though. They're on my Dropbox, but I can't get them. And so now I can pull up my iPhone, which doesn't have tethering, and I can see them on my Dropbox, but I have no way to get them from my Dropbox onto the computer. And so, plus they're in a zip file, which the Dropbox app can't open. I remember that the GoodReader app can open zip files. So on a whim, I go on the App Store and I get that for the iPhone. And I look in that GoodReader app and you can give it a link to download directly into the app.
Oh, so cool.
I go into Dropbox, get the public link, and copy that, paste it into the GoodReader app. It downloads, opens the zip file. So great, now I have my files in GoodReader. What next? Well, GoodReader also has the ability to transfer via Wi-Fi from the iPhone to the computer. You don't have to be on the internet. It's just you can just do it over any Wi-Fi network. Meaning, very I cool. could create sit there and create an ad hoc network on the iMac. Open up the GoodReader app, and it tells me an IP address to connect to. So I connect in the Finder to my iPhone, and directly pull the files via Wi-Fi off the iPhone onto the computer, and then I can load them into ProPresenter. This happened in the span of about 10 minutes.
Nice.
And so, and then my pastor never called for the slides.
Of course.
But I was ready. I would just felt like it was just this amazing round trip of all these apps and functionality. And it was just, it's really very cool. I had no idea this app could do this, that I could just connect to it, you know, in the Finder, like a server. It's basically a web dev server is what it is. And I can transfer files from the app into the app. It's just awesome.
Nice.
That's very cool. Now, is it,
it's not free though, right? But it's not too expensive, if I recall.
It's 99 cents.
Yeah, that's the 99 cent one. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally amazing.
You can't not, for that kind of functionality, you can't not get that.
I mean, just for the file transfer alone.
Yeah.
Because now any computer pretty much made in the last decade is going to have Wi-Fi in it. Maybe, I don't know, whatever, at least 5 years. And you can create your own network, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
Because you just connect to the IP address, and boom, you're on. And, I mean, it's pretty stinking cool.
That's awesome. That's now, sweet. You can also, if I recall correctly, you can open documents in their related apps. Like, if you send yourself a Pages document, you can, won't it pull up Pages or things? Or is it just PDF?
Well, no. The GoodReader app is all kinds of documents. I even opened an Illustrator document the other day.
Hmm.
And so now on the iPad, it can send it to its appropriate app, you know, Pages, Documents to Pages. On the iPhone, though.
Yeah, the iPhone OS, I think, doesn't recognize that type of linking.
Right. I don't think it does. So, and it also does not, the iPhone OS doesn't recognize being able to transfer files via USB like the iPad does.
Right.
And but very cool, you know, the fact that it can unzip a file and then transfer it via FTP and download from a link you give it. And it was
awesome. Is pretty clever, I got to tell you. That is a ringing endorsement, especially for a 99 cent application. You know, come on.
Yeah, that's, I mean, a no-brainer. It's kind of one of those apps that's going to stay on my phone forever now.
Yeah,
it's earned just one of those. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a different app for the iPad than there is for the iPhone. So it's 99 cents for each. It's not a universal app, but it's still 99 cents for each of them. Again, it's kind of one of those essentials now for me.
Yeah. Cool. Sweet. All right, Lou, do you have anything you want to cover before I get to the?
I picked up a game called Glass Tower 2. I think it was on top 25 free ones on the iTunes store, so I'll give it a try. It kind of reminds me of Topple, except that you take the tower apart instead of building the tower.
Like Jenga?
What's that?
Is it like Jenga?
Kind of. I mean,
but not
it
really.
It sounds like
not
boom really, blocks yeah. I mean, for the Wii.
What you've got is you've got a tower of glass blocks that are either square or rectangle or triangle, and your object is to get rid of one color of blocks and keep the red ones on the screen. And as you pull blocks out, other blocks fall down into the space created by the one you pulled away. So as they bounce off each other, they slide off the platform. You lose lives as they slide off. The gameplay is pretty easy to pick up. It's free for the first 10 levels. And then there's two in-app purchases for two level packs, each one 75 levels, which I haven't done yet, but I'm about to pull the trigger out of it because it was pretty fun gameplay. you know, nothing you're going to spend hours thinking about, but you can get into it. You can, you know, start playing with it, see how things work. There's different power-ups that go along in the screen as you get further in the game. You can freeze tiles. You can, you know, change the time and so forth, which is pretty slick. The other feature they have is an in-app purchase. You can buy a level creator, so you can make your own levels, which, you know, I think is going to give some good functionality to it. And for the price, free, you know, pick it up, try it out, see if you like it.
So I'm looking at the pictures here in the iTunes store. Do you tap on the blocks you want, or do you drag them off of the stack?
You just tap them. You tap them, they break apart. They're technically glass, so they shatter. And then the blocks on top drop down.
It does. It looks kind of cool. It looks like a variation of a game called Boom Blocks for the Nintendo Wii.
Okay.
The multiplayer mode. If you've got a Nintendo Wii, especially if you ever do like party games, or you have like other people come over to play Rock Band or something like that, you should definitely look into it. It's pretty awesome. But it also looks like it. Conceptually, this looks a little bit like Angry Birds, where you're like trying to knock down, well, tower type things. But this looks a little more Jenga-ish in its design.
No, it doesn't. It's not like Jenga at all.
The appearance of it looks more like that than it looks like Angry Birds. I mean, this is blocks set upon one another, whereas Angry Birds, you're flinging birds at these wooden posts and, I assume, killing them. No birds died in the making of this app.
Only glass.
Only glass.
And the shards don't stick around long enough to get hurt by them, so.
See, there you go. I stand by my point. Yeah, you're right. It's nothing like Jenga, though. Anyway.
Nothing like Jenga.
All right. So my big review for this week is going to be the Wired magazine application. We've talked about it a little bit before and the delay in it coming to the iPad. It is now finally arrived. It is $4.99, which is the same price as the print edition, the newsstand price for the print edition. And earlier this year for my birthday, I got a 3-year subscription to Wired. So I actually had the print copy of this particular issue. But for the sake of the podcast and my own curiosity, I went ahead and picked it up. It's both really good and really bad at the same point. First, the bad things. The price. It's the same price as the print version. And that's like 5 times as expensive per issue as a subscription. If you get a 3-year subscription, it's $1 an issue. And, you know, this is $5 an issue, and they don't have, I mean, you've heard the whole spiel about, well, if you get it digitally, you don't have to print anything, you don't have to ship anything, it doesn't have to sit in a warehouse, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that argument. The next thing that I don't like about it is the issue is a standalone application. It is not something where there is a Wired magazine app, and then that is a wrapper to buy and store different issues of the magazine. For example, the Marvel comic book app, you buy comics from within the app. The app is your browser for the comics that you've purchased. This is nothing like that. The app itself is the magazine. Yeah, so if you want to buy this every month, you're going to end up, well, you wouldn't keep it on your phone, but theoretically, you'd end up with 12 different apps in a year for Wired Magazine. It just doesn't make any sense. Well, now that I'm looking at my next bullet point, I can kind of see why they did it. The third thing I don't like about it is because the app is huge. It's like 500 megs.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Yeah. And that's probably why they don't have it in a browser app.
Because it's all PDFs.
That's the next thing. It's basically each page of the magazine is its own graphic image. But each page has 2 different images. So they have one image for the portrait view and a separate image for the landscape view. And then, you know, they probably threw them all together with XML or something like that. And it's, you know, it's huge.
It's so, I love all this technology Adobe's coming out with.
That's the thing. I mean, it's like of all of the, and I don't want to just jump on the Adobe hating bandwagon and say, well, it's Adobe, so of course it's bloated. But, you know, if the shoe fits. And this last point doesn't bother me a lot, but some people are upset because due to the fact that it's basically just a series of images, you can't customize the interface at all. You get the presentation that they're selling you. You can't adjust fonts or, you know, the font type, the font size, or things like that. Now, the good.
Well, hold on a second. I'm going to go back to that point real quick.
Sure.
Because there's a second level to that that's negative, and that's that you don't have any of the accessibility options. So if there's the ability for it to read text to you, you can't do that. And you also can't copy-paste that any of that text.
True.
Those are bigger issues to me than the font changing the presentation. Because I think that, you know, they designed their magazine very specifically. I'm fine with them setting the presentation.
Right.
But by limiting, but not making, by making it images, and that's just not cool.
Now, that's a very good point. I did not even take into consideration the fact that you can't copy and paste. I guess technically you're not really supposed to. I mean, if you're copying and pasting stuff from a print magazine, isn't that kind of a copyright violation? Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. But yeah, it's
a sticky issue.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes you're going to want to copy and paste a quote or something. I mean, you can't. There's no Twitter or Facebook integration, so you know the social networking aspect of things, you can't say, oh, check out this really cool article. Because Wired Magazine, a lot of times, you know, there's a bit of a delay, but they'll post their print articles on their website.
Right.
So it would be cool to be able to somehow, you know, implement social networking and share that stuff. And if you can't do that, at least being able to copy and paste a little bit would be nice. But no, you're right. And the accessibility, that's another issue that's going to be very critically important to some people, and this app just simply doesn't have it. Now, that being said, one of the good things, the presentation that they are giving us is awesome. I mean, Wired's presentation in their magazines, I think, has always been top-notch. I like the way things are laid out. I like the way it feels. And this is basically a direct reflection of the magazine. And it's kind of funny because, you know, I talked about it's a separate image for vertical versus horizontal, but when you're turning your iPad, it feels seamless and smooth, and it's kind of cool because, you know, when I first had it, I'm like, oh, wow, did they actually just, like, magically get the text to wrap around those other things that way and the graphics layout and stuff? Wow, that's really awesome. And then, of course, you know, once you look at the man behind the curtain, you're like, oh, well, that's pretty lame. But
from that, a user that does point help of view, me understand, though, the pricing of it, because obviously they're having to put a lot of effort into designing. So what you save in shipping and printing, you may be having to spend in extra design and programming.
But we'll come back to that. Right. We'll come back to that point. That's a very good point, and I do want to come back to it. But so the presentation is awesome. The feel of it. I don't think it feels as clunky as I made it sound with my description of what's going on the back end. When you're actually using the application, it's awesome. It feels like how you would want a magazine on the iPad to feel, with the possible exception that when you're scrolling from page to page through an article, you have to do it by page. You can't just like scroll halfway up the page or something like that, like the way we're used to doing it with a web page. So that was a little bit unintuitive, but with that one exception, it was awesome. The navigation is awesome. You know, in a magazine, you're going to have articles with like 4 or 5 pages per article, and you have to, you know, turn through all of the different pages for the articles you want to skip. In this, it's almost like kind of a grid matrix type of thing. To go to the next article, you swipe right or left. So you can have an ad. There are ads in the app, but you know, there's ads in the magazine when you pay for the magazine too. So, and I don't want to get into that right now. But, you know, you're on an ad and you swipe to the right and you get an article and you swipe to the right and you get another article and swipe to the right and you might get another ad. But if you want to read through the entire article, you swipe up and down and you go through each of the pages within that article. And then from anywhere in there, you can swipe right or left again to go back. It will retain the spot you were at in that that particular article. So that's kind of cool. The content, the Wired magazine's content, I think is always pretty awesome. It's one of the few print magazines I think is really compelling anymore. And I like the way they integrated the multimedia. It, not only is it good quality and it's very relevant to the content, but it's seamless. It's they have kind of this a 3D representation of different landings on the planet Mars, of different, you know, space exploration projects and stuff, and you can kind of rotate this 3D model around and it will highlight where the different things ended up. You know, space isn't really my thing, but the Toy Story article, they've got different shots, different portrayals of a particular frame from the movie, and, you know, the pre-visualization all the way through to the final rendered product. There's an article in there about Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, and you can listen to different samples of his music as it goes through different stages in production. The way in which they integrated the multimedia into the story content was perfect. I think it was great. Even a lot of the ads had multimedia, just on a whim. I tried some of those and they were, you know, the multimedia was snappy. It came up quickly. Again, probably another reason for the large size, but it didn't feel like most of the video that I try to get when I'm browsing something where I have to wait for it to load. It just instantly popped up. So that was really nice. So looking at this, you know, I think, first of all, you got to have a wrapper app. You have to have something to browse issues. You can't just release a separate app per issue. That's obnoxious. I don't care how big it is. I don't like that. So that's the first thing I'd like to see him fix. The second thing is with the price. Now, Jeff, you pointed out that what we're losing in distribution costs, we're making up for now with development costs and extra layout and things like that. I can't imagine it's that hard to format things in a horizontal landscape. I mean, that's what these people do. They do page layout.
Well, yeah, but you also just mentioned that something that is additional. That's the multimedia aspect. So now you have to collect these audio samples or these video samples. You have to, if these things aren't pre-produced, you didn't have to have a producer and an editor and things like that to produce these finished product, these pieces that are multimedia.
Yeah, I agree that's going to add some cost to it, but I can't imagine that's going to be as much as the Killing Trees route.
I definitely agree. I think it should be maybe you could do like $2.99.
Yeah, they need to shave something off of it. I'm okay with the fact, I mean, the print, there are some things in the magazine where they'll have, like they'll do a review of five different, I don't know, pick a the headphones. Okay, five different headphones. And in the print magazine, it's just there's pictures of five different headphones, and they've got little bullets next to them saying 1 through 5, and then down below they have a description of the product. In the iPad app, there's a text box, and you tap on which of the headphones you want to see the review for, and the review pops up in the text box. So that's, I mean, all of that media is already existing. But when it comes to the video, the little trailer from Toy Story, or the music from Trent Reznor, things like that. Okay. Yeah, you've got to hunt that down, and you've got to embed that in the app, and you've got to figure out where to put it and how. But shave something off of the price. It doesn't feel right to the user, who's probably not going to think it through like we do here on the podcast and analyze it like that. It feels different when you can subscribe for a dollar an issue. Or you can go out to the store and buy it for $5 in print form, and it feels like it should cost less if you're getting it online.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I wouldn't mind paying the same price. I mean, you're getting more for it in a slick iPad version, but you know, you got to give me something for subscribing. You got to give me the same kind of break you would give me if I'm going to the newsstand or getting it. I shouldn't say newsstand. You know, getting it mailed to me every month.
Right. Well, that's another thing. I would love to see a subscription option, and I know that that's something that Apple doesn't really accommodate.
Well, but the mechanism for that is already in the iTunes Store with a season pass for television shows.
Right.
Right. So
why don't they accommodate it for apps?
I don't know.
Let me ask you guys a question. How much of this is just these developers getting used to the fact that they're going to be delivering a quote-unquote magazine in a new format? I mean, are they learning this from the ground up? It's different than the web. It's different than a print magazine.
Well, yeah. I mean, they've actually got to program the app for one thing. I mean, that was part of the delay. Adobe was apparently contracted to do their app for them, and they were going to use this Flash-based system, and then Apple came out with the new rules, and they had to go back and learn Objective-C and all that. The developers do kind of have to get around that and figure out how to present the material. And we'll look at the Newsweek app. That just came out fairly recently. Their in-app issues are only $2.99. They have a browser app where you get the stuff from within the app. It's $2.99, which is half of the newsstand price. But so far, the reviews have been that it's very bare bones. It's basically just kind of like scans from the magazine. It's not that interactive. Now, Wired, it's Wired. They're techies. You would expect them to bring a little bit more to the table technology-wise.
Right.
But Time Magazine has the same type of issue. It's the same price as their normal print stuff, and I don't know that they really have much extra in the way of their app or multimedia options or anything like that. So, what's their excuse?
Mm-hmm. I think in general, the whole magazine industry has no clue what to make of this stuff yet. I think they're all figuring out everything right now.
Well, it's new. Yeah. It's a new paradigm for them.
Yeah, I mean, the publishing industry and the magazine and newspaper industry is one that has not changed in fundamentals for a very long time.
In our lifetimes, really. Yes.
And so, I mean, they should have seen it coming, but this is a big shift for that industry. So I'm fine with some growing pains.
I think
they're moving in the right direction. I think we'll get the details and the logistics nailed down, like the season passes and the wrappers for the app and things like that. That's going to come, I guess when I think, you're probably going to see companies, magazines like Wired start to push the standard. I mean, you see that the Newsweek app is getting nailed because it doesn't have this stuff.
Right.
And I think we'll see that kind of stuff going forward. And so, I don't know.
I want to be clear, as far as a review of this app, I'm including it as one of my picks for this week. I loved it. As a matter of fact, I found myself enjoying reading it on the iPad more than I was enjoying reading the print copy. And I don't have to figure out where to put the, do I throw it away? Do I recycle it? Do I store it somewhere when I'm done? I don't have to worry about any of that. And if I want to go back and reference something, I don't have to, 3 or 4 months from now when I'm like, oh, yeah, I wanted to talk about this on a podcast and there's this cool article. I can just go back and grab the app. I don't have to say, oh, but I threw the magazine away. I mean, there's a lot of benefits of having it. And it was just a more enjoyable reading experience for me anyway. I love it. I highly recommend it. Yeah, there are some complaints I have about the magazine industry so far. But, Jeff, you're absolutely right. We got to give them some wiggle room. And these are growing pains. Absolutely. But I want to be upfront about what the issues are so that I can then say that despite those things, I still loved this app.
Right.
So, cool. All right. Moving on. What other reviews do we have before we get to our picks?
I picked up a game that was on sale a couple weeks ago called Spaceballs.
Oh, I love that movie.
No, not the movie.
Oh,
I was kind of hoping, but no, it's basically a, and there's a few of the games like it out there. You basically match three or more of the same color balls in a chain and they blow apart. So I'm not sure what you call those kind of apps, but there's
just match three apps.
Okay. Yeah. There's a bunch of them out there. This one's, it's a space theme to it. You've got a little turret in the middle of the screen and the balls follow a track around you to a black hole. Obviously is to get rid of the balls before they go to the black hole.
Oh, okay. So it's like a Zuma type of
They related to Zuma in one of the things on somebody was writing onto it about on the app store.
Okay.
I got it for free, I must say, on one of the sale days. It's $2.99 regular. I'd have a hard time spending $2.99 on it. I mean, it's one of these things where if it was 99 cents or $1.99, sure, it's got some replayability to it, but it's not so different from everything else out there that I say, hey, let's get this. So pretty basic, but it was fun.
Okay. I've got another app here that pretty basic, and I think there is a group of people it will appeal to, but it is called iBrite, iBrite. And it's basically, you guys, I think, are both old enough that you remember the old Light Bright things from when we were a kid.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So the concept was back in the late 70s through most of the 80s, there was this board with all of these translucent colored pegs, and you would put them in this what looked like a black pegboard, but on the other side of that black pegboard, there was a light. So then light would shine through these little translucent pegs and be whatever color the peg was. So you could like, you know, you could like make these little pictures and stuff that would light up in different colors. And it was apparently all awesome and all that.
You know, hearing you explain it makes it sound totally boring. But well, back in the day,
it was fun.
Yeah,
for younger kids that may not know that, what was the version on the Mac? ResEdit?
I don't know.
Was that the application you used to be able to create icons by pixel?
Oh, I don't know.
It was kind of like that, where you're putting in little pegs into the black construction paper, and it would make you each little pixel was a light bright, you know, right. Peg.
I guess I'm not doing a very enthusiastic description of it, because if you'd seen anything I had created on one when I was a kid, you would be less than impressed. You know, the TV commercials always had, like, you know, the Mona Lisa and all this kind of stuff. And then I could do like a smiley face, and that was about it. Of course, my artistic qualities are elsewhere. But anyway, so this is for the iPad. And it's $1.99, and basically it is a light bright. Now it does it really well. I don't have any complaints about it. It is, if you're going to do a light bright app, or if you want to buy one, this is the one to get. And at $1.99, I don't have any complaints about the price. And I think that this would really appeal to kids like the original light bright did. The only caveat I have to that is that the child would need to be old enough to understand the color picker. And I would like to maybe see some presets across the bottom so you could swap more easily back and forth across the color. So basically, one of the buttons at the bottom is the color chooser. So after you're done, you know, tapping and drawing what you're doing with the current color on the screen, you go to this color picker. And it pulls up another window, and then it does have some little preset type things you can do over there with no instructions, mind you, on how to set those. Not that difficult for somebody like us to figure out, because we've worked with color pickers before and we kind of get it, but I can't imagine most kids intuitively being able to pick up on that. So over on the left, you've got your standard color wheel, and you've got a slider to adjust like the brightness and the saturation and things like that. And then you've got this complete color wheel where you kind of go through and drag your finger to exactly what you want as far as shading and stuff like that. So it's very powerful in the versatility it gives you in the colors. But I think for what's basically a children's app, it's maybe a bit too complicated in that regard. And I would like to see them maybe also give you an option to just pop up like a Crayola crayon box or something that's a little bit more intuitive for the younger users. So, but that's my only complaint. Overall, it's, for $1.99, if you think that would be something your kid would be interested in, I think this is a good pick.
But that also means you've got to hand your iPad over to a young child.
I ain't handing my iPad to nobody. You kidding me? Actually, I know we're running kind of long on time, so I won't get into it too much, but I did pick up one of the Dr. Seuss books on the iPad for Nicholas, and I let him
If you want an app to pick up for your little son, let me recommend for you SoundTouch.
All right, looking for it right now.
Because I have a 16-month-old daughter, and more than the Dr. Seuss books that read along with, she likes this the most. It's basically like, you know, it's like a CNC. Basically, you poke the picture of the dog, and the dog barks, and it comes up with a big picture of a dog. Huh. And got all kinds of safari animals and cars and musical instruments and so on and so forth. And it's universal, so it works for the iPhone and the iPad. And
yeah, but this
loves that.
Be another reason to let my son touch my iPad. With the Dr. Seuss book, you can
news flash. This is going to happen regardless.
But no.
Part of being a dad. It sucks, doesn't it?
You know what's really bad though is he's got my wife's old iPod Touch, mm-hmm, that we've just kind of given to him. Though we did learn the hard way we needed to go and delete the Mail account. Anyway.
Charlotte keeps getting my wife's iPhone and resigning her Words with Friends games.
Oh, that's cold.
Yeah, it's really tough sometimes.
That's hilarious. Yeah. But the thing is, the iPod Touch doesn't have a speaker in it, so this wouldn't work for that. But maybe, you know, we can give them one of our old iPhones after we upgrade. Maybe that'd work. You know, for $1.99 and it's a universal app. Sure, I might pick this up. And there's a light version.
Yep.
There you go.
240 sounds and images, animals, vehicles, musical instruments. Cool. All right. Well, anything else before we get into picks? Last chance.
Let's go to picks.
All right.
Sounds good.
Jeff, what do you have?
I've got an app called Delivery Status Touch. I don't know if you ever do any online shopping or just have stuff shipped to you. You're always wanting to track when your stuff is going to get there. And this is the best way I've ever found to do that. This actually started out as an OS X dashboard widget. And so if you go to junecloud.com, June, just like the month, cloud.com, you're going to be able to download the desktop widget for OS X. There's nothing for Windows that's equivalent to this, so apologies. And basically, it's a dashboard widget.
Easy for you to say.
Enter in all kinds of tracking information. You can tie in directly to Amazon.com and whatever Amazon.com is telling you. Even if it's going through FedEx or UPS or wherever, it'll tell you. It does Apple.com orders. It does, of course, straight UPS and FedEx and all that stuff. It does stuff I've never even heard of. Okay. So that's awesome. So it's got a dashboard widget. And there's also a universal iPhone, iPad app, which is really cool too. And they all sync together. He offers a back-end server, which allows you to sync your delivery. So if you put it in on one, it'll go to all the others. And the really cool thing is if you do get the chance to use the dashboard widget, it can actually check for you and it will push notifications to your devices.
And really? So when there's an update or something, it'll
you can get a push notification that'll tell you what's going on.
That's very sweet.
And so yeah, the widget is free, and the app itself is $4.99. Again, it's universal iPhone, iPad, does everything. The guy works on it all the time. And so he's always improving things and adding things, and it's really cool. On the iPad, it'll tell you, it finds your location. Then let's say if it's coming, I live in Nashville, and so if it's coming out of Phoenix, it'll show you your location. It'll show you Phoenix, and it's just kind of cool to watch it come over. I just a couple weeks ago, I had my iPad case shipped directly from China, and so I got to watch it go from China to Alaska and then on down throughout that path. But
I know exactly the path you're talking about. I just had to sit there and click refresh on a web browser for like 3.5 days.
Wouldn't it have been awesome if you could have had something check it for you and push notifications?
Absolutely.
To you.
I'm sitting here thinking this would have been great for my iPad, but I would have had to have the iPad to put it
on. You could have had it on the iPhone.
But it's universal, so yeah.
I do like the screenshot on the App Store. It does show, one iPad Wi-Fi 64 gigabyte USA not shipped yet.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just me.
Nice.
But very cool. Like I said, it ties into your Amazon. If you have stuff you're constantly buying from Amazon, which my wife and I do, and you don't have to go get. So sometimes Amazon ships FedEx, UPS, USPS. You don't have to go get those specific tracking numbers and put them in, but you can. And so, very cool, very reliable. Allows you to directly go to the individual company's website from within the app. So if you just tap on a UPS delivery, it can either show you the map or show you the actual details on the UPS website. And so, I'm a big fan, really rock steady, solid. And then, of course, like I said, once you pair it with the OS X dashboard widget, really adds that nice extra level of functionality with the push. And I think the sync works regardless because he supplies a service for that. But really very cool.
Cool. It sounds like it'd be great for a small business especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's just if you do any kind of consistent ordering online or shipping of anything like that, I think it's a great buy. And cool. Very well done.
So. Awesome. All right, Lou, what do you have for us?
I am going to try to be way more hip than I really am.
Okay.
My pick this week is the Vans Warped Tour 2010 app. The Vans Warped Tour is a festival type concert all day thing that's got all the kind of rock bands, punk bands type stuff, mainly for a much younger generation than I usually am. But I get to go every year and usually take photographs, so it's pretty cool.
Oh, so you have the old guy in the corner that everybody.
I'm the old guy up in front, in the pit there shooting. Somebody kind of goes, "Oh, I want to be him," but then they see.
While you're standing up there saying, "Who is this band? Why am I taking their picture?"
Right. Exactly. Well, this app is kind of like your survival guide to go to the shows. The shows are usually all day. It's like 10 a.m. to like 8 o'clock at night. And there's like five stages, mini bands playing every stage. They have, very small breaks between the bands. So it's just constant music all day long. What this app does is it gives you a rundown of all the bands so I can kind of be intelligent and say, "Oh, yeah, that's so-and-so." Like I know. But
nice.
It gives you all the bands for each location, all locations out there. I'm only going to the one here in Connecticut, so I can see just the bands playing at that venue. It does give you a My Set List in the app, but you've got to go to the board once you get there that day and manually put in the times. That doesn't seem quite right, but it does. So you can pick the bands you want to see, the bands, what stage you're going to be on, what time they're going to go on, so you can put them in there and set alarms in the app to, say, "Hey, I got to be there." Hopefully be on vibrate so you can feel it, because you definitely won't hear it. they've also got a few extras in there. They got a link to the Warped Tour YouTube channel, so you can pick up videos right off the phone. There's a survival guide telling you kind of do's and don'ts, what to bring, what not to bring, what's allowed, what's not allowed. Podcasts right off the app also. I don't know if it's streams. Nice. Well, I actually haven't played with that functionality yet. And the nice thing about it is, especially for me, that I don't know a lot of the bands. When you click on the band in the app and you want to hear some music from it, it'll bring you right to the iTunes store, purchase them then if you want to, or just hear the 30-second clips. So you get a feel for which bands I might want to see, which bands I'm going to shoot, and so forth. So I think they did a nice job with it, aside from that set list thing I do manually.
That actually sounds pretty cool. The set list thing, it could be that that's subject to change, and
I'm sure it is.
The morning of the concert, they might
stop is different, but they could push that out to you the morning of the show.
Well, yeah,
because when you get to the venues, there's usually a big inflatable sign where they show all five or six stages, and they show every band playing at what times they're on. I usually take a picture of it and keep referring back to the picture, but so you can update your phone and do it that way.
It'd be nice if it could go like an on-the-go playlist on the iPod app. If you could do that, but like with the list of bands, what I'm saying? And then just like go in and pick the band and then just assign a time. That way you just don't have to just flat out type everything.
Sure.
In.
Yeah, it'd be kind of sweet.
Yeah. Hmm. This is a cool app. I think it's free, which is awesome. And I know that there are so many other festivals out there like Bonnaroo and things like that where there's a lot to navigate and a lot to know what's going on when. So it looks like a great little companion app for an event like this.
Yeah, I can think of events similar to this in the past that I really wish I had something like this. So very cool.
Yeah, so hopefully that made me a little more hip. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Hey, if you were like me, any little bit helps. So, wow, yeah, here we are once again, Lou, destroying my pick, because mine does not at all make me feel hip. But I am going to defend it nonetheless. You guys know I hate, like, the Farmville, Farmtown clones and crap like that, right? So even though I still play Wii Rule, I think I'm going to get to level 25 or re-roll Wii Rule and then quit.
That's my friends in Wii Rule now.
Awesome. I told you.
Three or four screens worth of friends. So, hey, I'm all set.
See? Okay. So, I don't like that type of game. And when I saw Farm Frenzy 2, I'm like, oh, geez, here's another one. I'm not even going to run this app yet. I'll wait until I'm bored someday. And I got to tell you, I finally got around to running it, and I was pleasantly surprised right off the bat to find out that it has nothing to do with Farmville or Farm Town or Farm Square or whatever they're calling it these days. Nothing like that type of an application. Completely different. So right off the bat, that was a good point. And it's also a little bit difficult to explain, too. So you've got a... you are kind of running a little farm, but it's a timed, it's like a round based thing. So you've got a map of a bunch of different levels, and there's little tiny circles. It's like a level map. If you've ever played a game where there's like a map, and as you complete each round, it gives you access to another little square on the board. So this is like some different streets or paths on a farm, and there's little dots, and each dot represents a level. So when you go to a level, you get one static screen, and it's basically this little yard area, and you tap on the yard and grass pops up for your livestock to eat, and you tap on the well at the top of the screen to replenish it with water at a cost, allowing you to plant more, you know, grass to come up for the cows and chickens and stuff to eat. So the idea is, for each round you have a goal. You have to buy 10 chickens, or you have to have 20 packages of bacon, or you have to make $10,000 or something like that. And the goal changes on each level. And as you progress further through the game, you unlock different types of animals to do different things, etc. So what happens is some levels you start out with money, some you don't start out with any, and you have to acquire some to kind of build up some momentum to get the ball rolling. There is a timer, and if you complete the level within a certain amount of time, you get a gold medal, which gives you more of a bonus between rounds to buy extra buildings and things like that. There's also a silver, and if you don't make the silver time, well, you can still complete the level. You get a little bit of money to spend between the levels, but not very much. And I got to tell you, it's challenging enough that getting gold on every level is really difficult. But the idea is, okay, so let's say you buy some pigs and they're walking around and you're growing grass and the pigs are eating the grass and they're producing pork. So you tap on the pork and it goes into your little warehouse inventory thing down at the bottom, which you have to manage that too, where it will fill up. And so then you tap on another building to take that pork and cut it into pork slices. And then if you have pork slices, you can tap on the building to turn that into bacon. And then if you have bacon, you can tap on another building. Assuming you've sent your plane out to pick up some like material goods to come back, and you can have these little trays. So then the bacon is now wrapped up in shrink wrap and the tray's ready to go to the store. So you have your truck. Take the stuff from the warehouse out to the store and back, and that gives you money. Now,
on the farm?
It's okay. Well, on one screen of a farm, like one yard.
Okay, here's what I'm laughing at. If this game were to take off, there'd be a whole generation of kids running around thinking that farming was really easy, and they'd like go out to the country somewhere and just start poking pigs and wondering why stuff isn't happening.
Well, probably because the panda bears that drop in out of the sky would be scaring all of the animals off, and
absolutely.
What if you're a vegetarian? That wasn't
a joke. There's actually panda bears.
I doubt it.
Yeah. Now listen, it's because
panda bears are the scourge of the modern farmer.
Well, they
are. Let me tell you.
Yeah, but you can tap on the panda bears enough time, and it builds up a fence, like a cage around them, and then you can take those to the market and sell. So, okay, listen.
You're selling corny. Panda bears? Oh, that just sounds wrong.
Listen, it's goofy and it's cartoony, but it's a lot of fun. And yeah, here's the thing: if you go to the iTunes store and look at a picture, just look at a single picture from the gameplay, everything I'm saying will make sense. Because describing it verbally is really difficult and sounds complicated, but it's really not that bad. It's a lot of fun. It's a very fast paced game, and you have to manage your resources pretty well. And it is more simple than I'm describing it. For the iPhone, there is a light version, and there is a version for $2.99. Now, I have not played the iPhone version. I've only played the iPad version. The iPad version, and it's not universal, the iPad version is $6.99. So it is a little bit pricier, but I got to tell you, I'm playing this now more than Plants vs. Zombies, more than Field Runners, more than Warpgate, more than pretty much any other game. I'm completely hooked on this game.
Well, this is a lot.
Yeah, well, I'm picky when it comes to games that stay on my main game page and that I keep going back to all the time, but this is the only thing I have any interest in playing right now. I am that addicted to this one game. This is it right now for me. So that's my pick for this week.
All right. Cool.
We better wrap up. We are so over time, and I'm sorry to Lou and Jeff for that, but you know, when we don't
apologize to me, apologize to my wife
for so long. Oh no, I don't even want to talk to your wife. I'll get my throat slit probably. Not that she's that type of person. She's right. A wonderful person.
She did.
I would just be very deserving of it.
Sex and the City, but that's beside the point.
Oh yeah.
How was that? Never mind. We'll talk.
I forgot about that.
Elsewhere. All right. So that's it for this week of App Chatter. Tune in next week when hopefully we'll have some stuff to report from WWDC.
Yay!
Looking forward to that. In the meantime, don't forget to pick up our iPhone app. Do a search for Random Chatter in the iTunes store and pick up the app there. It's $1.99, but it lets you stream any of our podcasts through 3G. And despite what we talked about before with AT&T, we try to keep our bit rates pretty low and try to keep the size down on the MP3 files. So don't let that stress you out. You can still download the podcasts through iTunes, or you can get them through the App Chatter site itself. And I highly recommend you go to appchatter.com and check out some of the other reviews that we have up there. Real Racing HD, Tap Tap Nirvana by Tapulous, another good review there. Go check out the reviews there as well as listen to our podcast. You can check out our other podcasts at randomchatter.com. You can email us any questions, comments, feedback. If you're looking for a certain type of app and want some recommendations, shoot us an email, podcast@appchatter.com. And you can follow us at Twitter. There's a twitter.com/appchatter. There's also twitter.com/randomchatter. And the Random Chatter one is pretty much exclusively for the podcast. And that's it for this week. So tune in next week and we will see you then.
Good night.
Good night.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Cell Dweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as silly as a sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.